When Mario Cuomo lost his bid for re-election as governor of New York, he said the following about election campaigns. He said, "They start with conjecture and hope. They are filled with unexpected gifts and undeserved rejections, inexplicable pain, incredible joy, confusion, everything. How do they end? I come from a religion where the whole symbol of the faith is one of condemnation and crucifixion, but that wasn't the meaning of the entire experience, only the way it ended. And there's the significance to it. I'm saying this is a metaphor for all of our lives, that it is in the living, as it is in the campaigning, that you make your mark. And sometimes you win." Doesn't that sum it up? The challenge of life is in the living of it for each of us. And isn't that why we're here? To help us with the living of our lives. Not so long ago, the keynote speaker at one of the last General Assemblies I attended told the 600 ministers gathered there for ministry days that the tyranny of the market dominates every aspect of our lives. Well, think about it. Names like Michael Milken, Bernard Madoff, and thanks to the Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort, are now household names. But it's not just the infamous who contribute to this tyranny. It's also the fact that on average, statistics tell us that we see about 3,000 advertisements a day, all saying the same thing: buy more. So it's not just Gordon Gekko saying, quote, "The point is, ladies and gentlemen, greed is good. Greed works, greed is right, and greed, mark my words, will save the United States of America." Greed is good actually is the message that we see and hear all day, every day. And we're so accustomed to it, we hardly even know we're taking it in. I have long believed that one of the most meaningful aspects of church is the message that we get here, that greed is not good for anyone or anything. So many of the values of this faith are about the exact opposite. They are values about giving and sharing and caring and making a difference in the world. There is a reason why greed is one of the seven deadly sins. It is a great temptation. It is tempting to hoard and to accumulate and to hold tight to what is ours, like a toddler with a new toy saying, "Don't touch mine." But Gordon Gekko is wrong. We know greed is not good because it constricts the soul. In her book, Kitchen Table Wisdom, Dr. Remen tells the story of her father, who had long dreamed of one day being able to own his own house. And he fantasized about having a kitchen large enough for a dishwasher, a garden in the backyard, and he even dreamed of the color he would paint the living room. Most of his life, he worked two jobs and finally had saved enough so that when he retired, her parents were able to buy a house, a small house on Long Island. But when Rachel visited, her father would often be asleep in the living room, just as he often was in all of those years in his sixth-floor apartment. Though retired, he kept working two jobs. He worked to buy an expensive alarm system, just in case someone tried to break in his house. He refused to take vacations because no one could properly take care of his house, and besides, there might be a fire. There is wisdom in the Native American philosophy of not holding on too tightly. Wisdom in the Buddhist philosophy as well. No one likes the idea of giving money away. but I think everyone likes to think that they are generous. And for me, it makes all the difference in the world if I feel I am giving to something. As I said in my stewardship letter, in the package you'll be getting soon, I have been making annual pledges to churches for the past 36 consecutive years. And when I do, I feel as though I am giving to the values that I cherish most, to freedom of religious belief, to our principles and purposes, to our commitment to stand on the side of love, and to our long tradition of being against oppression and prejudice and victimization. What is it you give to? In our society, a capitalist, market-driven society, we tend to measure almost all of our transactions by whether they are a fair exchange or maybe even bargains. At the very least, we're looking for a quid pro quo kind of trade. But that's not what church is. Religious community is not a fair exchange. How could it be? How could we determine the worth of being part of a worshiping community? What if being part of this community encourages you and supports you in becoming a more loving person? Someone who cares about helping others, someone who is less cynical, more trusting, more generous of spirit. What if this community actually helps you to do those things, to become the person that you really want to be? What's that worth? What if this community encircles you so you feel as though you belong? And what if it grants you the privilege of singing in its choir or teaching its children? What if it gives you comfort in times of need or provides causes to support that makes your days more meaningful? Or maybe it facilitated a friendship or a relationship with a coming-of-age young person who now holds a special place in your life. How do we begin to determine the worth, the monetary worth, of any of these things? My colleague Duke Gray says, "We often need our religious communities the most when we can give the least in return. When we are children, for example, or when we are near death, or when we are in crisis and our need is great and our means diminished. And others give much when they seem to receive little. They give time and money and energy and vision in ways that others cannot match. And all of us are enriched for it. But it's not a fair exchange." So that's why I'm an advocate for the stewardship drive. It's because everything we do here is the antithesis of that which is said to be soul constricting. This faith means the world to me, and I know I have gotten immeasurably more from it and from the churches I've served than I can ever hope to give in return. Unitarian Universalism represents all that I value most in this world: freedom, justice, truth, goodness, and respect for the interdependent connection. And I wish there were more of us to support these values. This church has 98 members, and there are 25,000 people living in West Roxbury. So, being just shy of the other 24,902 folks in town, we know we're not reaching everyone. But that's no reason to not keep trying to get the word out, because what happens here is so good, we need to share it. Maybe we should think about church as an institutional value carrier. And if we want it to be strong enough to have influence, strong enough to make a difference, strong enough to grow, strong enough to last, then we have to invest in it. But not in a quid pro quo, what's the going rate for a Sunday service kind of way, but the spirit of understanding that gifts are most meaningful if they move on. Writer Lewis Smedes, who writes about life and love, says, "The pinnacle of our humanity is to be willing to say to one another, I will be there with you when it costs me something, because commitment is the invisible cord that binds us together. I believe," he says, "it is one of the powers which characterizes the mystery of being human, the power to reach out into the future, a future that we cannot see and cannot control, and say, I'm going to be there. I make that promise, and I have that intention." So that's what you're being asked. You are being asked to make a promise based on your intention, and in doing so, you will be strengthening that invisible bond. Governor Cuomo is right. It is all about the living. It's all about the unexpected gifts and the inexplicable pain and the undeserved rejections and the incredible joy. And certainly, it's possible to live life in all of its glory and all of its pain without religious community, but look around and see what you would be missing. So as your interim minister, I urge you to support that future by making the very best promise that you can to one another.